John said that just as humans have been infected by viruses with deadly results, so does food have that capability of wiping itself out. As giant corporations get more and more involved in the area of genetically modified food production, the advanced spirits in the afterlife who are able to look into the future describe this as being very dangerous. This would not be necessary if humans were eating properly and growing food as it was meant to be grown. As for scientific research in other areas, there are developments that are being held back from common knowledge. In spirit, this is regarded as not a bad thing, because the human race is not yet ready for some advances. 48. Accidents, suicide, euthanasia, and comas. There is always a lot of distress for families when loved ones die as the result of an accident, during an operation, through violence, and of course by suicide. Did they suffer, even for a few moments, especially when the death was sudden? John was able to answer the question instantly when he told us that the spirit leaves the body just prior to these distressing situations, to prevent trauma from being imprinted on the soul. Our spirit usually stands to one side when we are going through an operation, leaving the body at the time the anesthetic is administered, once again to ease the burden of trauma, which could leave a serious imprint on the soul. Sometimes there is a jolt to the body just after the anesthetic is administered, particularly with children, as the soul leaves quickly. Other spirits then arrive to protect that soul while it is out of the body in an unfamiliar state. However, if a spirit does not pass over immediately after an accident, or some similar incident, what happens in the intervening period may well be part of the experience that person agreed to in their life contract. Nothing happens by chance in these circumstances. Sometimes people can remain in a coma for many months or even years before recovering, whether the coma is natural or medically induced. So what happens to the spirit while the body lies dormant? According to John, the spirit comes and goes from the afterlife as part of its growth experience. The spirit is often aware of its surroundings and the comings and goings of family and medical staff, and some of these memories are retained, but it is mainly back in the world of spirit, being nourished and supported while continuing its education. The spirit also leaves just prior to the moment of death in a suicide. John had previously expressed his group's intention to discuss the whole question of suicide in today's society. I wrote in Afterlife that those who commit suicide are not punished but given special loving support to cope with the intense emotions surrounding them. Eventually, though, most of these spirits are sent back to Earth to live another life and once again face up to the same conditions they attempted to escape previously. In our latest session, the group raised the topic of the concern felt in the afterlife about the growing numbers of people taking their own lives. Suicide is now at one of its highest levels ever. Despite the so-called advancement in areas of medical knowledge, technology, and general lifestyle that many people enjoy, especially in Western countries. So another big question being addressed in the spirit world is, what can be done about the highest suicide rate in history? The group emphasized that the forces that pressure many people to contemplate suicide have to be faced and conquered by all of us. These destructive influences range from medication, alcohol, and recreational drugs to many negative pressures that complicate our daily lives. There are even dark energies around us that interfere and create havoc. The good spirits that surround us are there to help and encourage. But ultimately it is up to the free will of the individual. As John said, there is no easy answer to this question. Euthanasia is another question that creates a lot of controversy in a world wanting easy and instant solutions to its problems. It invokes strong emotions in people, as the proponents of euthanasia see themselves as fighting for their rights. They want to go out the way they choose in life, and families do not want to see their loved ones suffer. I have heard many people say that if you would euthanize a sick animal, why wouldn't you do the same thing for someone suffering from an incurable pain-filled illness? Even in the afterlife, John said, euthanasia is a very touchy subject and is looked upon in a similar way to suicide, for a number of reasons. Having the power of life and death can become very complicated, with the ultimate result that people may choose euthanasia not for humanitarian reasons but because life is not going their way. It could even lead to a form of population control in an increasingly overcrowded world. The ramifications involved in legalizing euthanasia are creating great concerns in the spirit world. Choosing euthanasia could also have a major impact on a people's life contracts, as the pain they suffer was probably agreed to before they were even born. The last few months of someone's life could well be when they have their greatest lessons, said John. This area of medical research is regarded in the spirit world with as much concern as IVF or genetic modification, particularly when power games are employed. John gave the example of a couple having an IVF baby, but deciding they only want a child of a certain sex. What happens if they create the wrong gender? However, the decision to switch off a life support machine or stop similar medication is regarded not as euthanasia but simply allowing nature to take its course. John explained that by the time a decision of this magnitude is made, everything possible has been done, and the spirit has usually departed from the body, often several weeks prior. The aura around the body would only be a gray mass. In many cases, this intervening period is necessary for the family to come to terms with the situation and face their grief. John also said that sometimes this is done deliberately so that the loved ones may use that time when the person is on life support to start their healing process. Once again, each case is unique. The question of cryogenics also arose. The idea to cryopreserve humans started back in the 1960s, when Robert Ettinger, inspired by a science fiction story, founded the Cryonics Institute in the United States. Inside the institute, more than 100 bodies float inside giant bottles filled with nitrogen at temperatures of around minus 150 degrees Celsius. The hope is that one day in the future some doctor with advanced medical knowledge will revive them. One of the most famous names linked to cryopreservation is that of Walt Disney, who was very interested in the science. Although records show that Disney's body was cremated, great mystery surrounded his funeral, which was carried out in secret, and rumors persist that his body lies cryogenically frozen somewhere underground in Disneyland. So if at some future time a medical advancement allows a body that was cryopreserved to be revived and physically healed, is it possible that person could come back to life? Would that same spirit, which had obviously returned to the afterlife, be able to return to its previous body? Would the spirit be able to choose to return, as in the case of someone in a coma, let alone be given permission by the elders in the afterlife? Many questions spring to mind about this whole bizarre concept, and most of us would probably dismiss it as pure science fiction. But, as we know, what we remember as yesterday's science fiction is coming true every day. John used Walt Disney as an example. Technically he would be able to come back, but he would not be Walt Disney anymore. This means that while Walt Disney's body might have been revived, it would give another spirit the opportunity to live in his body. The other point John raised was, who would be around to actually know it was Walt Disney? Famous US TV presenter and interviewer Larry King announced to the world on the Larry King Special Dinner with the Kings, Indiana 20111, that he wishes to be cryogenically preserved after his death. Born in 1933, Larry King was raised in the Jewish faith, but later declared he was agnostic. Too, during his very colorful life, King has risen to international stardom, conducted some 60,000 radio and TV interviews, including with some of the most famous people on the planet, and has so far been married 8 times to 7 different wives. I have to wonder, when celebrities choose cryogenics, what unfinished business do they feel they still need more time to complete at the end of a long life? Perhaps it is the fear of death itself, or maybe it relates to the old saying that there are not too many people on their deathbed who tell their loved ones they wish they had spent more time at the office. John Dingwall's group said that the technology of cryogenics could well be one of the many medical breakthroughs that are just around the corner. He described medical science as being right on the cusp of important developments at the moment, but was not forthcoming with any details. I guess we will just have to wait and watch. 49. mental health conditions. There were several sensitive topics John's group wanted to address in future sessions, and as I went into the healing room, where Kelly was already fairly deep in trance, I had an open mind, wondering which subjects they would discuss that evening. John immediately set the tone of the session when he said there was a lot more about mental health the group wished to address, including how it affects people in both worlds. The whole area of mental health is highly complex and perhaps more widespread than we would like to imagine. John's group had some potentially controversial points to make, describing mental health as a grey area, and people can often return to the spirit world with severe issues still deeply ingrained. The general feeling in spirit is that a lot of current mental conditions are connected with the nature of medication being prescribed. They believe the medication prescribed is not necessarily always about providing the people concerned with a better life, as is generally claimed. It is more about making life easier for those around them when mental outbreaks occur. Certain medications often slow down the healing process of that person and can actually prevent them from completely healing, John said. Mental health problems can be either part of a life contract or a combination of events that were created by the person concerned. John's example was that people who are living on the edge could have agreed to a life contract where they are to be given a choice of directions at a key point in their life. One direction will take them over the edge. This choice, which is part of the free will they are exercising, could involve such things as alcoholism, substance abuse, or extreme emotional situations, which would exacerbate the situation they are facing. Whether mental illness is part of a life contract or a condition created during a person's lifetime, when each soul returns to the afterlife, it carries an imprint on the spirit, which reflects the activities and emotions of that previous lifetime. This imprint can also be sitting on top of others, and may still be unresolved from different past lives. As previously discussed, each life contract we enter into contains karmic issues that must be addressed, but as our soul progresses through each incarnation, these imprints become less intense. When spirits with mental health imprints finally return to the afterlife, they are sent to healing centers that specialize in these conditions, and they are helped there by teams of highly experienced spirits to deal with individual circumstances. John told us that an important part of his work is helping people with mental conditions, which explains his personal interest in this area. While he described these spirits as being damaged, John was quick to point out that everyone can be helped. It is just a matter of how long it takes each individual to heal. Mental health problems can create a very deep imprint that is usually slower to heal than other medical conditions, and the healing period has a lot to do with the individual circumstances. This means there is naturally a longer process involved before that spirit is ready to reincarnate. Despite the work done in the afterlife, there can still be residual effects when that spirit does reincarnate, and these form part of the lessons it still needs to learn. We all bring back many hundreds of residual imprints into each incarnation that can manifest as problems and blockages that will need to be faced in that lifetime. We all know that when things are difficult in life, we tend to avoid them, because that is the easy way out. The hard thing is to tackle these problems head on, but, according to advice from the afterlife, not many people choose to go that way. Many spirits actually ask for obstacles to be put into place before they reincarnate so that they will be given the opportunity to face up to their karma after having avoided these situations in previous lives. This can also include experiencing mental health problems. These conditions are not easily swept under the rug. They have to be dealt with, and this impacts not only the person concerned but friends and other members of their family. So if these conditions have been agreed to, pre-incarnation, why is it so difficult for many people to resolve or even properly deal with their mental health problems? John's answer was immediate. One of the greatest obstacles in spirit's path in dealing with mental health issues is certain pharmaceutical institutions, which say they have miracle drugs that can cure problems. These include mental illness, as well as conditions such as depression and hyperactivity. He said that a lot of these lessons are placed there in spirit for a reason. John went on to say that in the case of some children being born, whom he described as being ultra-sensitive and often highly intelligent, the parents are the ones who have the most trouble dealing with them. The parents are living in a society where they want to be entertained by all the visual aspects that are on offer. They don't have the patience or the environment to sit and spend the time with these children to help them. People are working too hard and come home too tired to cope with these children's special demands. It is easy to give them medication or some other form of distraction to make life easier. John agreed that certain conditions have to be treated with medication, as they involve a chemical imbalance in the body. However, he affirmed that every case is individual. He made the point that medication is not always the ultimate answer, despite the fact that many people have placed sole reliance on this form of treatment. Broadcaster and author Craig Hamilton wrote about the lifestyle changes that he found imperative in dealing with mental health problems. Craig spoke to me on Radio Out There about learning to live with bipolar disorder and is adamant that medication is only part of the answer. In his book A Better Life, 2, Craig tells how changing his diet, virtually giving up alcohol, and embracing such practices as yoga and meditation have all contributed to dealing with his illness. He acknowledges the importance of staying on his medication, but advocates an overall holistic approach. The big problem is that society still regards mental illness as something to be treated like a bout of the plague. When someone is seen as being different, it often brings up fear in those people around them, said John. They are seen as needing treatment, and medication is the easy answer to make them normal like us, in debt and stressed. Overall, people need to exercise great patience and understanding to help those with mental problems, especially the ones who cannot help themselves. John pointed out that it may also be in the life contract of those who are giving support to spend their lifetime in this way. The tapestry of life weaves its own mysterious path for every one of us. Finding and following that path demands trust and an open heart. 50. Homosexuality. The issues of gay rights, gay marriage, and the like are so often in the news today, you would think that homosexuality had only been recently invented. Public opinions and attitudes are divided on this subject, and many fundamentalists are all too prepared to believe that gay people will go straight to hell when they die. So what is the attitude in the afterlife to this delicate question? The love of one human being for another is not seen as a blasphemy, was the reaction from John's group. If two men or two women love each other, they are not punished in any way. The main consideration is the morals of the people concerned, something that applies to any relationship. The way people conduct their lives is what really matters, and the fact that they are homosexual is irrelevant. The most important thing to remember is that we are all spiritual beings enjoying a human experience. John described homosexuality as simply expressing a sexual preference and nothing else. There is no spiritual law being broken and it is not considered immoral in the world of spirit. Many people on earth are completely opposed to homosexual marriage, stating that any formal union must be between a man and a woman and is integral to the propagation of the species. My heart beat a little faster when I heard the reaction from John's team. If any individual truly opened their hearts to love, and felt the presence of true love, even for a few moments, they would not condemn anyone from loving another human being. What a beautiful sentiment, and surely something to be embraced in any relationship. Once again it raised the question of life contracts, as certain relationships, homosexual or otherwise, can involve unresolved issues from past lives between the people concerned. A lot of complications arise between homosexual men and their fathers and between lesbians and their mothers, according to John, and these are highlighted because of the sexual situation. There may also be issues with the opposite sex that need to be faced and resolved in that lifetime. When a person chooses to be a transvestite, it may also involve playing out past life issues. If a spirit has had several past incarnations as the same gender, it can bring those strong senses back that may manifest in sexual preferences and appearance. As part of his afterlife group studies into human nature and the tapestry of life, John has followed the lives of certain spirits over many incarnations. He likened this to reading a series of books about a certain person's lives, and spirits can spend weeks in a group session examining all the different scenarios and analyzing why these events unfolded as they did over many lifetimes. It is a fascinating study of why and where things go wrong in life, and the reason we study it is so that we will not make those same mistakes. Sometimes these studies involve historical figures, which, John said, makes it all the more interesting as a group analysis. Everything is examined and dissected, from the ins and outs of their daily lives to their relationships, why they failed and the strengths and weaknesses involved. Perhaps this could be classed as studying spiritual biographies. 51. The Dark Side. While Kelly is in deep trance, allowing John's spirit to take over his body and talk directly to us, he describes resting in a state of complete peace in a very quiet part of his being. Knowing that trance mediums are vulnerable at times like this, I asked John what protection measures were in place for Kelly. John informed us that hundreds of spirits are here in the room with us, supporting Kelly. This is to prevent any dark spirits from taking advantage of the situation and jumping into Kelly's body to create mischief or even to take over. It reminded me of the time several years ago when I was working with two mediums on live broadcast radio. We were taking calls and connecting listeners with their loved ones over the airwaves. When we listened back to a recording of the show the next day, it sounded as if we had a live audience on hand with so many spirits chattering away in the studio. The station manager couldn't believe his ears when he heard the playback on tape the next day, and we found a new believer. John's support team has a twofold purpose: to provide Kelly with the energy needed to communicate clearly, and protect him at the same time. John emphasized the importance of putting in place correct protection for anyone connecting with the spirit world, casting aside the negatives generated by fear, and creating a barrier against negative spirits through the positive energy of love. Lower or dark spirits are quite capable of entering and co-inhabiting a human body even if the person is not trying to connect with spirits. Usually there are other negative factors at work, such as drugs or alcohol, basically issuing an open invitation to these dark energies. It is also important to avoid treating contact with the spirit world as some kind of game, or using devices such as Ouija boards to conjure up spirits. In most cases, these pursuits are done with no protection at all and can be very dangerous, according to John, particularly if people are harboring negative thoughts at the time. It allows all kinds of spirits and entities access. There are also those people who are trying to access the spirit world for negative reasons, such as practitioners of black magic, and vulnerable people can easily become prey to dark entities at this time. People who are delusional or have mental problems are probably the worst persons to try to contact spirits, John said. Their minds are very vulnerable and they are opening themselves up to possession by dark energies ready and waiting to take over a physical body. There are two main ways in which dark energy can take over the body. The most severe is possession, whereby a powerful and very low energy takes total control of the body at the connection point between the heart and the soul. Here, they can exert a very powerful influence on that person through the emotions. On the other hand, an attachment is less powerful than a possession. Attached spirits like to hang around and influence control over a person, but not necessarily inhabit them. These dark spirits are very clever, according to John, and the people concerned do not know they're losing control of their lives. These attachments also have the patience to hang around to trick their victims, and slowly work away to exert their influence. They know the weakness of the person concerned, such as ego, greed, or jealousy, and these entities have the knowledge and cunning to exploit this chink in their armor. John emphasized a point he had made in an earlier session: the dark forces are stronger than those of the light. This means that, besides drugs, alcohol, and certain medications, the weaknesses around extreme negativity in a human can be exploited by a dark spirit to gain control. Negative emotions such as fear, hate, and anger can open the door for these entities. Spirits working against the dark side do so from the heart, in other words, using the positive power of love. John's next words rang true: if you base yourself from the heart and work with it, you will never have a problem. The dark spirits reside in the lower reaches of the afterlife as well as in other dimensions, and refuse to acknowledge the light. Many of them are still earthbound, clinging desperately to the places they were familiar with, refusing all offers of help to cross over to the world of spirit. Fortunately, this does not have to be a permanent state, as advanced spirits are working constantly to bring the light into these regions, and when a dark spirit is ready, it is able to move toward that light. However, this is a very slow process, and it takes a lot of energy to coerce them out of the void where they reside. It is a similar situation in many cases to the underworld these spirits inhabited in their previous life on Earth. It is important to bring these dark energies into the light, because their control over people on Earth is interfering in the life contracts of those concerned, which can affect many more people in their environment. Dark energies continue the antisocial activities they indulged in before they died, with no respect for law and order. John said it is very difficult for the powers that be to control these spirits, because they can't just lock them away in some prison, as happens on Earth. They would exercise their free will and just walk through the walls. Spirits in the afterlife are also constantly working with the people on Earth who have been possessed or have attachments, to help them release these dark energies. This often means working with experts on Earth to help remove these entities, and the combined energy is often very successful. Sonia, a spiritual healer who had helped clear my aura on a couple of occasions after I had been exposed to extremely negative situations, came to the rescue when a dark energy took up residence in my house. Sonia helped remove a family of spirits who had moved in and were causing great disruptions. They had taken over the area where my office was located and were blocking work opportunities from coming to me, as well as creating emotional disharmony in the household. A special clearing ceremony helped these interlopers to move on, and things started to improve almost immediately. It was soon after this that I was introduced to the work of John of God. This marked a transformation point in my life, and eventually inspired me to write Afterlife in the very office that Sonia had spiritually cleared a couple of years earlier. It is always wonderful to realize and acknowledge our spiritual connections, and express gratitude for the help and guidance we are given from the heaven world. 52. Prison reform. There are many topics of discussion that I have brought up with John and his team over the many sessions we have had together, and I felt we had covered most major areas I needed for this book. So I was taken aback at the end of one session when they wanted to raise the subject of prisons in our next meeting. Having just addressed the question of dark energies, I was intrigued to discover why John was so adamant about raising this topic. The following week the team was obviously waiting impatiently to speak about prisons as John jumped straight in after our normal greetings, saying they wished to express their concern over the impact of these institutions. My reaction was, "We have been locking people away for their misdemeanors all through Earth's history. So why are spirits suddenly expressing such alarm?" I hadn't given any thought to the question of incarceration before this, and the group's answer proved to be obvious. Prisons are inhabited and controlled by dark spirits who make it nearly impossible for those from higher levels in the afterlife to intervene or have any positive influence. So there is little or no opportunity for spirit to enlighten and heal those who are imprisoned. Extreme negativity is apparently present on a massive scale in these small areas. John and his team described the whole prison situation as being another serious concern in the spirit world. They emphasized that it is an important issue in this day and age because of the increasing numbers of people being imprisoned, especially for drug-related crimes. This has a big impact on society as a whole, because prisoners are not being healed or rehabilitated but merely locked away and punished with an out-of-sight, out-of-mind attitude by the general public. People in prisons are damaged individuals who need to be nurtured and healed, according to the team. The overwhelming view in the afterlife is that throwing people in prisons is possibly the worst way of healing a human being imaginable. If the system is not changed, there are going to be dire consequences for the human race. The current system attracts the downfall of other humans with its inherent violence. It promotes negativity and the worst aspects of human nature.